I'm watching TV and Tosh is making me laugh, so I wrote a tweet saying your show makes me laugh. Mm-hmm. And then I put it down, and then like 2 days later I come home and I read these like bloggers and like Hollywood Reporter, Louis C.K. defends Daniel Tosh amid rape joke controversy. I had no idea. He got in trouble for making some jokes about rape, and I didn't know about it. And so I'm a defender of rape. That's what everybody says now. And I've read all this stuff like, shame on you, Louis C.K., and I'll never watch your show. You're a rape apologist. I've been called a rape apologist because I said hi to a guy. Because I said, hey, nice show to a guy who everybody was mad at. So
you really got, the lesson here.
Yeah.
Never go to Vermont.
No, it's dangerous. It's dangerously
a dangerous place.
But here's the thing. This is like a fight between comedians and feminists, which are natural enemies, the biggest,
yes.
Easily. Because, stereotypically speaking, feminists can't take a joke. And, stereotypically speaking, and comedians, see? And comedians. And on the other side, on the other side,
to send you back to Vermont right after the show.
On the other side, comedians can't take criticism. Comedians are big.
Yeah.
And they can't. To one side, you say, if you don't like the jokes, stay out of the comedy clubs. The other side, you say, if you don't like the criticism, stop Googling yourself every 10 seconds. Just nobody's making you read it. It's positive. To me, it's all dialogue is positive. Now, a lot of people don't feel that way. For me, any joke about anything bad is great.
Right.
That's how I feel.
Right.
Any joke about rape, Holocaust, the Mets, whatever. Yeah, any joke about something bad is a positive
you
thing.
You have now crossed the line, mister.
But now, I've read some blogs during this whole thing that have made me enlightened to things I didn't know. This woman said how rape is something that polices women's lives, that they have a narrow corridor. They can't go out late, they can't go to certain neighborhoods, they can't dress a certain way, because they might. Now, that's part of me now that it wasn't before, and I can still enjoy a good rape joke, so I have both of them. But here's the last thing.
I don't like the way that you evolve as a person.
No, it's not.
But let me just say, like the way that you've come up with a way to grow as an individual.
No, it's not fair. It's not,
be the person that I knew 20 years ago.
I will. But here's the last thing I want to say about it. This is also about men and women, because a lot of people are trading blogs and things about this with each other. Couples are fighting about Daniel Tosh and rape jokes.
Really?
Yeah, that's what I've been reading in blogs. But they're both making a classic gender mistake, because the women are saying, here's how I feel about this. But they're also saying, my feelings should be everyone's primary concern. Now, the men are making this mistake. They're saying, your feelings don't matter, your feelings are wrong, and your feelings are stupid. If you've ever lived with a woman, you can't step in worse than that, than to tell a woman that her feelings don't matter. So to the men, I say, listen to what the women are saying about this. To the women, I say, now that we heard you, shut the up for a minute. Let's all get back together kill the Jews. That's all I have to say about it.
Send your complaints to Brian Williams, care of NBC. Louis C.K.
We got men and we got women, males, females.
Right.
And as it turns out, amazingly enough, testosterone is an incredibly important substance, both for its acute effects, the stuff that happens right now, and for the effects that it produces chronically over time. In other words,
right.
Men have been bathed in testosterone since they were conceived, and the in utero effects are, as it turns out, just as profound as the acute effects that we feel day to day. In other words, you can give female athletes anabolic steroids and they will still not perform to men's standards. There are profound differences, and these things turn out to be primarily neuromuscular. In other words, women do not recruit motor unit contractions as efficiently as men do. And for those of you that are not up on this, the motor unit is the smallest unit of contractile organization.
I want to get into the science.
No, just hang on just a minute. I can make this. It's not that big a deal. Women cannot perform as efficient a muscle contraction as men can.
Okay.
And as a result of that, you know, that has some implications for training, and that's primarily what the previous article was talking about. But in real world terms, for instance, the male record standing vertical jump is 46 inches. The highest we can find recorded female standing vertical jump is 29.5. This is a profound difference. The averages are similarly different. And as a result, men and women function different physically. There is no more competitive a sport than combat. Okay? I mean, so we're willing to put up with men's and women's tennis. But for some bizarre reason, we have to integrate ground combat units where people are killing each other. And I just don't understand the need to place politics before reality.
Right. And that's one thing that's important as someone who's entertained the troops and been overseas. You know, they talked about this once Barack Obama became president. People, they always have to respect the commander in chief. So you don't often get them talking about this publicly, but they said, you know, the military was a petri dish for a completely apolitical realm, and that's not the case anymore. And these were people, some of whom were liberals and some of whom were conservative. That's a really noticeable shift in the military. And the gender push, it's really at the forefront of this entire sort of, I guess, subjective standard agenda right now. And, you know, it's funny you talk about that, about combat. We're basically sending off women to war, to an ill-equipped position, to die in the name of progress. Imagine me putting you on a it's like me putting you on a manufacturing line saying, oh, by the way, wear all of these rings, necklace, bracelet, jewelry, and you're going to work on the manufacturing line in a tank top. Have fun. That's the kind of disadvantage you're giving them, and we call it progress. And if you speak out against it, just in purely physiological terms, that's what we'll talk about next, the backlash. So we got a lot of backlash as sexists simply for mentioning your piece. Did you get a lot of that from maybe your European fan base?
Well, I have not received any what you would call negative feedback on my website. I have two threads up about this right now. In fact, the only female response we've had is that, yeah, you're right. I'm a female, and I'm, you know, in a forward MOS, and you're absolutely right. We don't want. We can't perform at the level that men can. And it doesn't even need to be commented on. It's just an obvious reality of the situation. The only comment I've seen is through my limited exposure to Twitter, and there seems to be a woman in somewhere
Twitter.
Northern Europe that thinks that my analysis is somehow incomplete, although she hasn't read the previous article that actually details the physiological underpinnings of my conclusion. This is just arithmetic. This is no more complicated than arithmetic. You have the numbers, the average female standing vertical jump is 14 inches. The average male standing vertical jump is 22 inches. That particular test measures genetic capacity for power production.
Right.
If we are talking about ground combat, we're not talking about flying drones. We're not talking about resupply. We're not talking about pilot jobs. We're talking about the people on the ground that shoot people and ride around in trucks that get shot at, that have to deal with wounded buddies, picking them up and evacuating things. Actually, where there is a physical presence, where there is force to be produced between the ground and your hands, okay? Women aren't as good at that as men. Why is this difficult? I don't understand it myself. Why is this difficult? We've got men's and women's golf, but we have to integrate combat units where people are getting shot at and killed and shot and picked up and loaded onto helicopter. I don't understand it.
You just hate women, Mark? Is that what I'm hearing? You just loathe women? Is that what you are? You're a sexist?
That's what it is. I'm a misogynist. I don't. I hate women.
Yeah, I hate women so much I married one. It's one of those things where, I mean, and they'll try and find some extreme examples, like with certain factions of Spartans, and be like, they sign up for women as warriors. A, it's not the rule. It's an incredible exception. Go ahead.
You know, this is, you know, there are overlaps. Okay?
Sure, of course.
Overlap looks like this in this case. The best women.
And we'll have one on after Courtney. She's very athletically inclined.
Will function better, more efficiently in a situation like that than the worst men.
Mm-hmm.
But what we're talking about, and I hope it doesn't come to this, is the relaxation of standards, lowering the bar.
Oh, it's already happened.
They're yelling and screaming about it not happening, but I'm afraid it's...
No, it has happened. We've lowered PT requirements for women. I mean, last I checked, people get mad. Obviously, I've gone and I support the troops. I'm incredibly appreciative of the troops. I do what I can as a lowly comic, but the pull-up requirements were something like, they were not a lot. They were like 5. They were not a lot that you would expect for the military. The PT requirements for depending where you go, obviously, are much less stringent than they were. And not only that, but let me tell you this, Mark. When I was in Guantanamo Bay, actually I was sponsored by a female sergeant. And I won't name her name, but she was a female sergeant. I don't remember if it was the Marines or what. I don't know what the terminology is. But she said, she just was a woman. She said, they send me women now, and I'm not allowed to yell at them. She said, so I there's nothing I want to see less than women coming in here, and I know it's going to be difficult to train them. They're going to have their feelings hurt. Generally, when you find women who are above entry-level positions, they're just as frustrated, and we've had them on the show.
Yeah, and I understand there's one coming up behind me here.
Yes.
Now let me say this. I don't have the PT requirements memorized for all of the services.
Right.
I don't have those memorized. I'm speaking from... A purely theoretical standpoint, pointing out the fact that there are differences in muscle physiology, and this results in differences in performance between the sexes. And if you can assign physical requirements to a job description, then it's possible to quantify who gets to do the job.
Right.
That's all I'm saying. And I think that And this argument, see, this is the part that really hadn't uncorked yet. This argument also applies to any type of civilian occupation.
Yeah, firefighters.
The physical requirement, police and fire. You know, I've talked to fire people. I've talked to cops.
Let me ask you this, Mark. You've met me. How many women are going to be carrying my lifeless body out of a building? How many women in America can you find who are going to have an easy time with that, someone my size?
Well, it's going to take 2 of them.
Yes. 2 for just my butt and then several others for the...
At the same time is what I thought.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a statistical reality. And it's we'll bring on Courtney. Kit, go ahead.
What does Kit weigh? If you're wearing Kit, what does that weigh?
That's probably about another.
If you've got to pick somebody up and put them in a helicopter, what does that weigh? Right. What's the door on an armored personnel carrier weigh?
Right.
If it's over on its side, you got to get it moved. These situations occur on the battlefield every day.
Right.
And if we are willing to tolerate the presence of people that cannot physically perform the job, I don't care what sex they are.
Right.
Then we are making decisions based on something other than the efficient performance of the job.
Right.
And that's my point in this article.
Marxist teaching is not a tiny fraction of the modern feminist agenda. And it's not a fringe movement either. It is its centerpiece. From the time of Karl Marx to the 1960s and up until today, the progressive women's rights movement has hardly been about women's rights at all, but instead about the transformation of American society and the transfer of wealth through government force. Women's rights have simply acted as a veil to distract away from the true intentions of progressive activists. The socialist revolution in America depended on two things: a breakdown of the family and women voting for progressives, both of which they have been very successful at doing. In their 1974 manifesto, Prairie Fire, The Politics of Revolution, Anti-Imperialism, Domestic Terrorists, Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, and The Weather Underground devoted an entire chapter to how the women's rights movement should be used to advance revolutionary goals, calling feminists to join the ranks and their political agenda. They wrote, quote, "Sexism will not be destroyed until imperialism is overthrown. It is in the collective interests of women to do this and to take full part in building a socialist revolution. We need power. Socialist revolution lays the foundation for the liberation of women and begins dismantling the tenacious institutions of sexism." Now, there were only a few hundred copies of Prairie Fire that were produced, and the book has obviously been long out of print. Only the closest activists were privileged to see their blueprint plans for women moving forward in America and through the decades. But as the introduction to the manifesto states, it was written to communist-minded people. But more importantly, it was written to women's groups and laid the groundwork for a long-term takeover of the feminist movement. This analysis represents the beginning of a process, not its final conclusion, they wrote. So in this manifesto, Bill Ayers, who has close ties, obviously, to the president, even though nobody wants to talk about that, Bill Ayers gave women a set of tasks based on his realization of the power of an uprising of women could bring to the progressive cause. He said, quote, "Our goal is the development of feminism, which genuinely determines, safeguards, and defends the collective interests of women, and which points in the direction of revolution. We need to build a revolutionary feminism. Women are at the intersection of the crisis, of a crisis, and the will to survive." So they believed that men acted as male supremacists to women, and that in order to change society, a breakdown in the traditional family structure was necessary. And in order to destroy that structure, they portrayed women as victims inside of it. Quote, "The individual capitalist family structure is a wasteful social form and not healthy for children to grow up in. It's a trap for women. It is a sanctioned form for sexual exploitation and a hypocritical double standard. The family breeds competitiveness among us." You think the left hates competition? They do, even in your own family. "The family breeds competitiveness among us, allows no future for women to grow with children, demeans old women, separating them from the life of the community, and the ability of single mothers to work and raise and care for children and maintain a household is a monument to women's strength and determination. The modern male-run nuclear family, when we tear away the veil of sentimentality, is the basic unit of capitalist society. Capitalists in the modern family matured together historically, feeding off of each other's development." So you can see that they understood what capitalism was about and exactly the way that they needed to change it to implement their own progressive socialist policies. But the fact is, despite what the Weather Underground and their ilk want women to think about the so-called wasteful structure of the free market economy and the family, the embrace of the traditional family structure is one of the best things that's ever happened to women, and it has kept them out of poverty. It should be no surprise that according to a report from the United Nations Development Project, women living in anti-free market or socialist systems, especially in Eastern Europe, experience higher rates of poverty. And so the Prairie Fire Manifesto wasn't on the fringe of far-left policy positions. Its philosophies were deeply rooted in Marxist and socialist thought and prevalent throughout Marxist and socialist literature. Take, for example, Feminism and the Marxist Movement, another book that I picked up at the NOW conference, how winning the liberation of women is inseparably linked to the struggle of the working class to transform all economic and social relations, by Mary Alice Waters from 1972. Waters was the editor of the Marxist Journal of Politics and Theory and idolized mass murderer Che Guevara in her writings. In her work, Waters just details the role socialism played in stoking the 1960s revolutionary feminism, how the Socialist Workers' Party and Young Socialist Alliance promoted the idea of women's liberation being necessary to change the economic structure of the United States. Quote, "We threw ourselves into the movement to learn from it, to better understand it, to help lead it in an independent and fighting direction, and win the most conscious feminists to bring the most conscious feminists to an understanding that only a socialist revolution could provide the necessarily material foundations for the complete liberation of women." So they're saying in order for women to be liberated, you have to tear down a capitalist structure. At the same time, she wrote, "We began the process of arming ourselves theoretically. We studied the relevant Marxist classics more deeply than before and tried to apply them to current reality. We grounded our practice and political orientation in the fundamentals of Marxism." And so Marx was a hero for Waters, who became a hero of the feminist movement. So someone she glorified and pointed out, she pointed out that he was right when it came to the so-called oppression of women inside the capitalist family structure. She lamented the idea that many women choose to stay home and be a wife and a mother, and acknowledged that the women's suffrage movement was not built on the idea of destroying capitalism, but that it was something that needed to be changed through the hijacking and renaming of the women's liberation movement after the 1960s. So one thing that people might not know is the women's suffrage movement was actually a conservative movement. It was conservatives who wanted women to have the right to vote. It was conservatives who pushed through legislation that allowed women to get the right to vote. It was the left that voted against getting women the right to vote. And it wasn't until later, when it came politically convenient, as Bill Ayers lined up in his manifesto and many others, that they hijacked the movement and have been getting credit for being pro-women ever since, much like they did with the civil rights movement. And so as socialists began to infiltrate and hijack the feminist movement, they began to create new organizations parading as women's rights groups with an underlying agenda of socialism and redistribution of wealth in America. The National Organization for Women was one of them. There are many more. So I know we've heard a lot about Marx, but we, I think, need to take a look at what exactly he said and go straight to the source on the issue. What did he say about women? Well, you can find it all in the Communist Manifesto, which is sold at your local socialist bookstore. No. But it really can be found all in his Communist Manifesto, where he boldly states his goals of destroying the family and promoting single women in addition to dependence on an all-powerful state government. He wrote Abolition of the Family, saying that men claim to exploit their women in their families. On what foundation is the present family, the bourgeois family, based? On capital, on private gain. It is completely developed from this family. This family exists only among the capitalists. But this state of things finds its complement in the practical absence of the family among the proletarians and in public institutions. So Marx believed that keeping women and children protected inside the family was exploitation. He also believed instead that they should be raised by and educated by the government. He said, "Do you charge us with wanting to stop the exploitation of children by their parents, as if keeping kids inside the family was exploitation?" You'll see this a lot with the education system. Why is it that progressives want your kids to be at school from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. and want to feed them three meals and have everything come through the state education system? He says, "To this crime of wanting to destroy the family, we plead guilty. But you will say we destroy the most hallowed of relations when we replace home education by the social state." Social studies, ring a bell, anyone? But what Marx failed to mention about women was how his goals would leave more women in poverty along with their children. And so, in closing, there are just a few questions that we can ask in the modern era that are based of the feminist movement and of the left that claims to be pro-women. In the modern era of Barack Obama, there's a few questions that we can ask that destroy this bogus idea that the left is where women belong. You know, if liberals really believe that strong, independent women can protect themselves, then why do they oppose the right to keep and carry a firearm for self-defense? You know, if Barack Obama is the most pro-woman president in American history, as many far-left feminist groups have classified him, then why does he seek to make women more dependent on the government and dependent on the government for everything that they have? You'll remember during the 2012 presidential campaign, the Obama campaign produced this Life of Julia slideshow. And, you know, I always like to hold the left accountable up to their own standards, as if they have any, but to their own standards and statements. And they're constantly screaming about sexism, right? And this Life of Julia slideshow portrayed this young woman who's born, and then she dies. And her entire life, she is dependent on the government for everything from her food, her education, her housing, raising her child without a father, everything. But where was the life of John? Why is it that the left only thought that it was women who should be raised by the state, that they were the weaker of the genders, that there was no way that they could survive any time in their life without a government handout, without the government holding their hand? On that issue, of course, this was included in the Life of Julia. If the right to an abortion gives women personal autonomy and sexual freedom, then why are its debilitating after effects conveniently ignored? We often hear this accusation that conservatives are against women's health. Well, if conservatives are against women's health, then why is it that conservatives want women to know all of their options and all of the information before they go in to have that procedure? It's the left who is constantly trying to keep information out of the hands of women on very serious lifelong decisions that they make in those medical areas. And finally, if conservatives are so insensitive to women, then why is it that the sexual lechery of Ted Kennedy and Bill Clinton has been ignored or covered up for years? You know, the left has been lying to women and all of us for decades, and they've successfully rewritten history. The left talks about women in one way, in reality, and treats them, or they talk about them in one way, but in reality, treats them very differently. And the left has been selling victimhood as empowerment for decades. I know that I'm sick and tired as a woman of being defined by the pills that I take and being defined by lady parts or body parts or as a victim of my gender. And I'm sure that a lot of the women in this room are too, and I'm sure that the men are tired of being accused of hating women simply because you want them to pay their own bills, which once upon a time was an empowering thing to do. The bottom line is that women succeed through opportunity, free markets, and hard work, not through dependence on the government or through socialist policies. And we all succeed in this way. The place to push back against this classification of women, the sexist classification of women by the pills that they take, is on college campuses. And it's important for Young America's Foundation to continue that fight.
Women in ground combat. It is fashionable these days to appear concerned about what is currently interpreted as inequality. Inequality can be accurately defined as any diversity in the outcomes of any human endeavor, deemed to be the potential subject of an op-ed piece in the New York Times, the Washington Post, or Yahoo News. As such, what I'm about to say will be ignored by these outlets, both because it appears to promote inequality, even though it does absolutely no such thing, and because it is based on a logical analysis that cannot actually be made the subject of opinion. And despite the fact that I have been dealing with strength training in a professional capacity since 1977, and despite the additional fact that my methods have made more people stronger in the past 10 years than anybody else in this business. To wit, if a particular occupation or physical activity has a quantifiable strength, endurance, or power component inherent in its successful or even satisfactory performance, then the physical requirements of that job or activity can be quantified. And if the physical requirements of the job can be quantified, then the physical abilities of the potential holders of the job can be specified.
so can their hiring criteria. My article about strength training for women, neuromuscular efficiency, details the important difference between the physical performance potential of men and women and explains its physiological basis. It has not been refuted. Briefly, men and women displayed disparate levels of neuromuscular efficiency based upon sexual differences in hormonal milieu. Their divergent physical development under differing hormonal environments and the very real limitations this physiological divergence imposes on us, whether we like it or not. This last part is tough. We cannot really do anything about the reality of the situation except to, one, deny that it exists, or two, deny that it is important. Well, it exists just as surely as there is men's and women's tennis, golf, basketball, soccer, and every other sport. And it is most assuredly as hell important, especially when the outcome of ignoring it becomes more important than merely winning or losing a game. Getting yourself and other people killed is not a game. And it should also not be the unintended consequence of politically motivated employment policy. Once again, if the job has quantifiable physical requirements, then the job should have quantifiable hiring criteria based on objectively assessed levels of required physical performance. Anytime a job's physical testing parameters have been altered to determine anything other than the most successful objective physical performance of that job, the job's ultimate successful outcome has become secondary to the hiring agenda. Or the job wasn't really important anyway. The appearance of importance has become the primary concern, along with other agenda items. Equality, and yet at the same time, diversity, the old Orwellian term doublethink applies here, have become the primary concern within some military organizations. The most important thing in the world is diversity, even when some of those super valuable differences mean an unequal ability to do things. Good news! Your salary has been increased from $4,000 to $3,500. Some examples are obvious. When compared to men in the same unit, women in infantry and special forces ground combat roles cannot physically perform to the same standard required by an objective assessment of the physical performance necessary for all members of the unit. This is especially true if the enemy is composed of male fighters who might be willing to take advantage of any opportunities handed to them. There will be, of course, individual and primarily, unfortunately, hypothetical women who can operate at the same physical capacity required of men in combat, but not many. Recent experience has demonstrated that lower performance levels and higher injury rates in integrated units are the normal outcome. This is not surprising to even a partially objective observer. Now, it may be determined that an all-female unit is a viable entity on the battlefield. That way, apples are being compared to apples. Diversity is therefore promoted across the service while at the same time eliminating the problems of inequality within a unit. If we, as a society, are prepared to deal with the consequences of the potential defeat of an all-female unit under our flag and our command, fine. That's a separate question for another essay. Conversely, we may determine that not all members of an integrated unit must be able to do all of the physical tasks the members of the unit might be called upon to perform under battlefield circumstances. For example, women never, ever have to carry the machine gun. That's the rule, damn it. Doesn't matter what's actually necessary right now. But if all members of a unit might realistically be subjected to the same physical conditions in a combat situation, then we cannot be prepared to integrate people into that unit who do not meet the same objective physical performance standard. Doing so will get people killed who otherwise might not be dead. Thorny social interaction topics aside, and this assumes that they can really be ignored, they can't, but that's a whole nother different essay. Male-female integrated combat battlefield units are inherently less efficient in a hot combat situation. That might be fine for people sufficiently cynical to advance human resources and political objectives over battlefield outcomes, but that makes me uncomfortable. I hope it makes you uncomfortable too. And the only way such a thing can be accomplished is to lower the physical testing standards for everybody, or lower the physical testing standards for women. This is irrational. If the job in question has objectively accessible physical requirements. Irrational, illogical, and dishonest. If physical standards are lowered so that more women can be included in ground combat infantry and special forces, and even law enforcement and as firefighters, then fools and knaves have been allowed to make the decisions.